Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're spending the hour talking about philanthropy and the new face of philanthropy in South Dakota. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. In the studio with me, a couple friends. Jennifer Kirby is here with us and Lindsay Myers. Welcome, both of you, for being here. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Let's talk about one of the reasons why you're here is because you were recently recognized at the 2017 Governor's Award for Philanthropy. That's put on by the Association of Fundraising Professionals, South Dakota Chapter. Avera Health, who Lindsay represents here today, is recognized as the Outstanding Philanthropic Corporation. And then Miss Jennifer Kirby, Outstanding Volunteer Fundraiser, all by your lonesome. So first, congratulations, both of you.
Thank you.
Jennifer, let's start with you because, you know, you could do anything as a private citizen. This is something, this is an award that's given to you for work that you've done as an individual. You've been on this show before. If people don't remember, we'll remind you, part of the Levitt at the Falls, the reason the Levitt at the Falls project is going forward is largely because of the work you and your colleagues have done. We had you on the show to talk about that. Also, you're working on American Cancer Society Hope Lodge for Sioux Falls.
Right.
First, tell me a little bit about the Hope Lodge, and then we'll talk about how you got sort of drawn in to this world of philanthropy.
Sure. Thank you. The Hope Lodge effort is something that grew out of a personal experience I had. My mother was diagnosed with cancer in her sinuses a few years ago, and she needed to receive treatment in Minneapolis, which was about 70 miles away from her home. And she was going to have head and neck radiation every day for 6 weeks, 6.5 weeks. And so the whole ordeal was, you know, kind of traumatic and startling. And first of all, you have cancer when you think, I'm never going to get cancer. And then you have to leave your home and your friends and your family for treatment for a long time. And then also head and neck radiation is pretty unpleasant. And she was just astounded by the fact when her doctor said, you know, there's a place you can stay here. It's for free. And it's just for people receiving cancer treatment. It's called Hope Lodge. And so the first day she was going to start treatment, I went with her, we checked in, and we were very worried and didn't know what to expect, and we heard people laughing and people, you know, living life and finding companionship in each other. And within a couple of hours, we had some friends, and we couldn't believe the support that we received from the other guests there, and that really inspired me down the road to investigate about bringing a Hope Lodge to Sioux Falls because it was such a supportive environment and at a time when you really, really need it.
Right. Now, my brother is going through, or recently went through head and neck radiation twice, two rounds of it. He lives near Minneapolis, so he's making the drive every day, which makes it easier on him for sure. But that community that you're talking about also feels like it could be very supportive and helping someone with their healing journey.
Oh, yeah. It was so critical. And in fact, at towards the end of my mom's treatment, I said, Mom, what if, you know, you need to live 40 miles away or greater to qualify to stay at the Hope Lodge? And I said, Mom, what if you lived, you know, 30 miles away and you weren't able to stay at the Hope Lodge? I said, what would you do? She said, I'd have to move. So it was just critical. She made, you know, great friends. You know, I made friends there. And also, you know, the cost of staying somewhere in a hotel is prohibitive to a lot of people if they're going to have to be somewhere for 6 weeks or so. And so just removing that barrier enables more people to get treatment. And so not only does it provide this social connection, but it also enables more people to have access to treatment because, you know, we don't think it should depend on where you live. You know, shouldn't determine if you're able to receive treatment.
You shouldn't have to move.
Right. There's not time for that sometimes.
So tell me about what that looks like in Sioux Falls. You'd like to bring one of these Hope Lodges to the city of Sioux Falls.
Yeah. We're in the silent, quiet phase of our fundraising, so there hasn't been a lot of public discussion about it. But we've been working on it for, I'd say, almost 3 years, and we've done a lot of legwork. We've had extensive discussions with both healthcare systems who've been wonderfully supportive and receptive to this idea. We've did a feasibility study because we wanted to figure out, will we be successful? Can we raise the amount of money that we need to raise? And then we have had, you know, just a few task forces involved of just regular volunteers, and then we also applied for the Community Appeals designation for our campaign, and we're lucky enough to receive that. And then now we have a volunteer leadership team put together, and we're meeting and working on creating or generating lead gifts.
How did you, as an individual, sort of allow yourself to be drawn forward one step and then another step and another step to where you're spending so much of your time really doing this work? You know, nobody's paying you to work on their staff and do this, right? I mean, you're right. You're doing this as part of who you are. How did you get here from there?
Well, it's really, really fun. I mean, I do it because I enjoy it. It started probably, you know, my background was in business. I went to business school, and I would always have kind of business development type positions or project management positions. And so a lot of those skills are transferable to fundraising. You have to build a team. You have to talk to different parties. You have to get people excited about it. You have to strategize how you're going to do things. And so my first big undertaking was raising funds to convert my daughter's middle school to a charter school in Southern California when we lived there. And we were already, everything was ready to be approved to become a charter school. And then we got a curveball thrown at us. The school board wanted us to raise $235,000. We had about 3 or 4 months to do it. And that was a big challenge. But I remember I volunteered to lead the effort, and I remember once walking to my car after a meeting thinking, I love this. Mm-hmm. I just loved it. And so, of course, there were some sleepless nights. It was not just, you know, piece of cake, black and white, slam dunk. It was a lot of work and a lot of teamwork. And but we met our goal, and the school is now a charter school, and, you know, now there's a waiting list to attend. So that was kind of my introduction to fundraising and what kind of got me on this road.
Lindsay Myers from Avera Health, I want to bring you into the conversation because Avera takes this the award, the 2017 Governor's Award for Philanthropy Home as a corporate entity. So talk about corporate culture a little bit and how much of these kinds of conversations are a part of your daily conversations about mission.
Absolutely. So Avera is first and foremost, we're a health ministry. So we need to serve our patients that are coming into our doors every day, but we also need to be part of our communities that we live in. And part of that is just looking for those synergies that exist with partnerships because we're stronger together. And so that's always what we're looking for. And we're led by the ministry of the Benedictine and Presentation Sisters are really where we grew out of. And they're still very much a part of our everyday work at Avera and help to lead that mission and that culture that we have. And so we're not only offering mission-based activities like a free clinic downtown in Sioux Falls and, you know, even offering liver transplant in a market our size is part of a mission moment to be able to do that. But we have to look beyond just healthcare because people need access to food and affordable housing and education and all of those important things. And those are places where partnership makes more sense than going at it alone.
When you receive a distinction like this, is it a call to action to really do more and keep that more in the forefront for you as an organization?
Absolutely. It's so, I mean, humbling to be recognized for this. It wasn't anything that we expected. The South Dakota Community Foundation had actually nominated us for this, seeing our work. And some gifts that we give at Avera are very large gifts that sustain for years and years, you know, education pieces, simulation labs, things like that. But they more recognized us for those smaller pieces that we do, too, where $5,000 towards getting access to medications for people who have lost their homes, smoke detectors in our communities, things like that have this ripple effect that lasts for sometimes years to come when we're able to give gifts like that. So it's definitely been humbling for our team to be able to go through this. And we have a whole governance committee of people of all varied backgrounds and expertise that serve on our donation and sponsorship group. And so it's nice for them to be recognized for the work and discernment they have, too.
With facilities so far flung, how do you coordinate your efforts so that you know what's being done and you can have the most impact through that collaboration?
Absolutely. We've come a long ways. Just in the last 4 years, we saw this as a real opportunity for us to work together as a system and to share that systemness and those best practices. And so we actually put together this multidisciplinary team that's kind of new to us in the last several years and asked people to give of their time, to spend time really looking at the donations that were coming forward and making good, judicious decisions, because we only have so many resources to go around. So we really spend sometimes months thinking about things and trying to figure out what's going to be best for our communities. But being able to support even the smallest towns that we're in, because there's a lot of good that happens in those communities. So even $100 for a post-prom party that keeps kids from drinking and driving, I mean, those are things that are worth consideration and should have time spent on them.
Jennifer, you've been doing this for a long time, and I'm wondering how crowdfunding and social media has really changed. Does it not change it as much as you might think? Is the message always still the same?
No, that's an area of fundraising I don't have a lot of experience with. I think once we open the Levitt at the Falls venue, that's something that we're going to pursue, because we'll be trying to reach a broader range of people. But my expertise, if you want to call it that, at this point has been more raising funds for capital projects and going and making those individual asks for larger dollar amounts. But I think, you know, the crowd fund sourcing is definitely part of the future and something that we're going to explore with the outdoor concert venue.
But that's interesting to me, because that's sort of the answer to the question, which is it's all about the ask still. It's all about looking face to face with somebody and having that conversation, making that connection.
And having a relationship with a person. I can't think of a single time I've called someone I haven't known, just a cold call, that has resulted in even $1. It just doesn't work. You know, as much as, you know, I'm sure I'm game, I'll call anyone, but, you know, and maybe they'll meet, but it doesn't really ever turn into anything. So it's all about getting the right team in place. And then if you have the right team members, you have all of their social contacts and relationships that you can then make the most of. And then, so it's really not a, it's not an individual sport. It's a team sport of just the highest degree.
All right. So how do you, you know, when you have a personal relationship with someone, how do you sort of convince them to have that vision that they can be a philanthropist? Most people don't see themselves that way.
Yeah.
Not me. I don't have quite that much. I don't have, you know, I'm not quite sure. How do you sort of get people to see who, not only who they are, but really who they can be and how fortunate they are?
I think it starts by finding people that are excited about what you're doing. And if you can kind of make that connection, then the conversation can go into maybe how they can support it. I mean, one wonderful, heartwarming example. Just recently, a friend told me that they were so supportive of what we were doing with Hope Lodge that they were looking into perhaps donating 10% of her husband's salary next year to the project. And that just blew me away, because they're young. They have teenage kids. They have a lot of expenses on their horizon, and to think that they would be willing to make that sort of gift when I'm sure there's a lot of other uses for their funds really was just heartwarming and so touching. So I think part of it is just you got to find people that are interested and excited in what you're doing, and not Levitt, the outdoor concert venue. Some people are super excited about it. Some people, it's just not their cup of tea, and that's fine. That's, you know, same with Hope Lodge. Some people think it's really exciting. Others, you know, not really their thing, and that's completely fine. So it's all about finding that connection and what resonates, and then seeing, you know, if there's a way it might fit into their financial picture.
And I agree with so much of what you're saying, and giving, I think, is really a learned activity for people, so they have to, you know, see that at some time modeled in their life to get there. And so I grew up in a really small town where everyone had to help each other. So it was just such an expectation, you know, you helped your neighbors when their cows got out and things like that. So especially growing up in the Midwest, I think our people are incredibly generous here, because we're so used of, if you can't give your treasures, give your time to something that really matters to you and that your heart feels drawn to.
Giving is a learned activity. Do you believe that, Jennifer? Is your experience
absolutely
borne that out?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are people that are just good community supporters. And when I reach out to them you know, ask them if they want to meet and learn about whatever project I'm working on. You know, quite often they're, yep, let's meet, let's learn about it. And they just, it's part of who they are. It's part of their, part of the Sioux Falls culture, part of the South Dakota culture is we give back. And it's amazing, but I think it's what makes this community so special and our state so special. It's because people are willing to give back and have that pride of ownership.
All right, so tell me a story from your, when do you remember learning about the sort of, you know, a life spent giving? When did it, was it your mom? Was it someone in your family who sort of?
I think so. Yeah, my mom mentored a refugee family, and I was probably about 10 or 11 years old, so that's an impressionable time. And she spent a lot of time with them, drove them to a lot of English lessons and appointments, and really mentored them, was friends, stayed friends with them lifelong. And I think seeing just her helping others, like without regard to what they looked like, where they came from, anything like that, I think that's an example of, I think that really played a big part in, you know, how I see it. It's important to help when you can.
So we're all parents here. And I'm wondering, is this, Lindsay, do you think it's something that you talk to your kids about? Do you think it's something that you set the example for? Both.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and I have a 9-year-old and a 2-year-old, and my 9-year-old is growing so fast, and it's important to make sure that he sees that, because I grew up on a farm, he grows up in town. And so it's like, how do you teach those same lessons that I had, you know, watching my grandparents be pillars of the community and things like that. And so I really take him with me a lot to work, and I take him when I do charitable pieces, like we do service pieces like at the banquet, or, you know, anywhere that you can find something to volunteer for. That's really important to model for your kids, because it makes a big difference. But, you know, the sisters told me something that really made an impact in me. And it's when we're doing that type of volunteer work to really see the people that you're serving as equal to you. You're not there, you know, just giving to them. You're there helping, you know, to make their day better and things like that. And that made a huge impact to me. So when we go to the banquet, when we go to do different service projects with our church or our school or whatever it is, I really like to see my son connect with people there to realize we're all the same. We're all human. And, you know, we're all cut from the same cloth.
I agree 100%. I mean, I think, but for the grace of God, I could be having dinner at the banquet. I mean, just one little twist of fate here or there, and it could be a completely different situation. And so there's absolutely no difference between anyone receiving certain services in town or, you know, what we're doing. It's just, we're just all cut from the same cloth, like Lindsay said.
It reminds me of your comments about what the sisters say of Brené Brown, the author and researcher, who says that if you're not willing to accept a little assistance from other people, then maybe you're not ready to give yet. And there's a sense that because, yeah, you're not in, there's no separation between you, who you are giving to, and when you receive. And maybe look internally a little bit at that, you know, how you're judging the people that you're helping if you're not willing to take a little bit of assistance, you know, on a different level than maybe what we're talking about today. But
and
there's
so much
connection there.
Yeah, this technology culture that we're in, you know, to put your phones down and really get outside, talk to your neighbors, get to know the people around you so that you can help others, you know, that are just within your community when they do need it. Because when we start to lose those connections, that's when we really get far from our mission that we live within.
Jennifer, do people need to see results? And how do those results sort of encourage the next act of service or philanthropy?
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, people are making gifts, but they also are making investments in what you do. And so I think it's vitally important to meet the deadlines you need to meet your financial obligations, to build an organization that's structurally sound and solid and sustainable. And that's what you owe all your donors. And that's what I'm excited about what we're doing with Levitt at the Falls right now, because we're in the process of looking for an executive director. And my goal is to build the most solid nonprofit organization we can, because it's easy to, you know, get involved in a nonprofit and kind of see some things that could be improved. But I'm just thinking, why not make this as good as it can be and as solid, just inherently structurally solid, So it's not dependent on just one person, but that, you know, people can come and go and come and go, and we'll have all of the procedures in place to keep moving forward and sustain ourselves. And that's pretty exciting to have that opportunity to build something like that. And, you know, we have a fantastic board and great committees and great committee chairs, and everyone's working really hard to make that a reality.
Lindsay, results. Do you see that at Avera too, that the results are significant, and communicating what those results are and telling that story is also significant?
We ask a lot more reporting from our partners than we probably did in the past, and that's part of telling that story. So we want to hear that we're really making an impact, and how many people come through when we're doing a mobile food pantry that offers fresh fruits and vegetables and healthy meats. You know, we want to know that 7,000 people came through that program and things like that. And that's really helpful for our committee members to be able to see that they are really making an impact in people's daily lives. They're changing lives. And that helps them to know which projects, to fund and which ones to say, you know, this is a great effort, but we need to go back to the drawing board and help you to come up with a better business proposition that has more sustainability for the long term, just like Jennifer's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, do you think about legacy?
No. I just think I'm doing what I'm here on earth to do. I think I have certain skills and strengths, and I have enthusiasm, if you haven't picked up on that. And it, you know, it comes in handy. And so if I can use my strengths to help others, that's perfect. That's what gives my life purpose. And I'll do a lot of things in order to, because the benefits are so great to me, because I feel so satisfied and so rewarded by the things that I can accomplish that hopefully do spread out and ripple out and help a lot of people. That's what I think is really, I'm just so fortunate to have the opportunity and to have these skills that lend themselves to this. So,
all right. So how are you going to feel when the Levitt is there and it's a summer day and the city of Sioux Falls comes out and the kids are running around playing and the music is playing and you're standing there looking it over? You're not going to think about legacy then?
Well, I hope I'm not worried about whatever that day's worries are, because you know how we are. It'll be wonderful. It'll be wonderful. Super exciting.
Any final thoughts, Lindsay, on legacy?
I really see, you know, what I'm doing as just helping to carry on the mission of the sisters and to help to carry, you know, Avera's mission forward. And partnerships are so important to everything that we do. I mean, we couldn't do it without that. I mean, when the sisters came here, they had nothing and they needed those partnerships to start hospitals that have sustained for over 100 years. And so that's really what we're doing, is we're helping to carry that on for the next 100 years and 100 years after that.
Lindsay Myers, Jennifer Kirby, thank you so much for being here. It is always a pleasure. We appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.